One of the criticisms frequently aimed at Congress is that gridlock, where decisions come slowly, if at all, as both sides draw their respective lines in the sand, and there's just not much compromising. The result? Well, latest Gallup poll finds Americans' confidence in Congress is at its lowest level ever. Confidence in the federal legislative branch is at just 10%. That's down 3 percentage points from last year's Gallup poll. But lack of action is not the case with state legislatures across the country, where, thanks to one-party control in 37 states, we're seeing action and lots of it. State Line is an independent, nonpartisan news service of the Pew Charitable Trusts. This week, it released its annual review of state legislatures, giving us a good look at the major budget and policy developments at all 50 state capitals. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Scott Greenberger. He is an editor for State Line. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you very much for having me.
Would you agree that the big story of your 2013 legislative review is that action gap between the federal government and state governments?
Absolutely. Being here in Washington, I can tell you that it is, in fact, gridlock. There's not a lot that's going on Capitol Hill right now, but on a whole host of issues, everything from abortion to gay marriage to immigration to gun laws, not to mention health insurance exchanges and the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, states have been very, very busy, state legislatures, this past session.
Scott, would you agree that having one party in control in 37 states and with a veto-proof majority, by the way, in 22 states, does that basically mean you don't have to play nice with the other team?
Yeah, that is what it means. In many states, the party in power has the party that is in the majority has the ability to push through whatever legislation it wants because it does have those veto-proof majorities that you've talked about. And that means that unlike in Washington, where the parties are pretty evenly balanced with the Senate in control of the Democrats and the House in control of the Republicans and, of course, a Democratic president, there's a lot getting done in state capitals. And what's interesting from our perspective is that they're doing very different things, though, because there are states that are blue states where the Democrats are in control and have the ability to push through what they want. And then there are red states where the Republicans are in control and they can pursue their agenda.
Which we certainly know well here in Michigan, as I'm sure you know, as you follow news from Michigan with a Republican
right.
governor and the majorities in both houses. I'm just curious, historically speaking, is this an all-time high for having one party in control in 37 states?
It is the most in 60 years, so it's been quite some time. I don't know if it's an all-time high, but it's certainly in modern times, it's a high.
Well, tell us, if you can, we've seen here in Michigan about the agenda and the activities for a Republican legislature and a Republican governor. How does Michigan compare to what's happening in other red states?
Well, in some areas, it is similar. For example, on the issue of guns, I know that Michigan loosened some of its gun rules this year. In states controlled by Democrats, for example, Connecticut and New York, they went in the other direction. On other issues, gay marriage, the blue states were a lot more active in legalizing gay marriage this year than the red ones were in placing barriers to gay marriage.
Of course, the biggest story out of, I think, politics in Lansing for us was the right to work vote that happened with the lame duck legislature late last year. And that's
exactly.
Something that you have seen in your survey with a decidedly business friendly approach in other red states.
Absolutely. But in some, I mean, also another example I should mention is Medicaid and the idea of or the question of whether to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And as of right now, if I'm not mistaken, Michigan is one of the handful of states that's on the fence on that issue. So in that respect, it's also when you count the ones that are opposed or on the fence, it's in line with other red states.
Let's get more into contrasting what happens in a Republican state versus a Democratic. As I said, we know very well in Michigan the kind of agenda that happens when a state is red. Draw back the curtain and give us kind of a sense of the important agenda items for the Democratic state legislatures.
Well, the best example, I think, and one that we've highlighted is Colorado. That's a state where Democrats control the governor's mansion or office and both houses of the legislature for the first time in a very long time. And they've taken advantage of that to take action on many different issues. They tightened their gun control laws. They opted for Medicaid expansion. They approved gay marriage, and they also loosened their marijuana laws. In fact, they legalized recreational marijuana. So in that respect, Colorado is an excellent example of a blue state that went very far in a blue direction. Another issue that Colorado acted on, in fact, is allowing immigrants who are in the country illegally to get driver's licenses.
Yes, in fact, talk some more about that immigration issue and how you see contrast between red and blue states.
Well, immigration is a particularly interesting issue because for the past several years until this year, a lot of the immigration action in the states was to restrict immigration, to make the laws tougher, stricter. And this year we saw a real difference. So in this legislative session, it was the blue states that were more assertive, perhaps because of the national mood following the 2012 election. And they have pushed for driver's licenses, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. But also in-state tuition for the children of, particularly for children or immigrants, rather, who were brought here as children and are in the country illegally, but attend high schools in a state and want to attend college in the state. A lot of blue states acted to grant them in-state tuition.
Are we seeing a shift in the positions of Republican state legislatures just based on what we're seeing on a national level after, as you cited, the November election was kind of a clarion call to many in the GOP about where to stand on immigration?
Well, yes, absolutely. I think that the fact that President Obama won such a huge proportion of the Hispanic vote in the election, and the sense among Republicans as well as Democrats that was really decisive, and you see the National Republican Party trying to change its image, if not its policies, and perhaps its policies as well on immigration. So, I think that's. You know, that's an issue where we've seen quite a lot of movement and a pretty significant shift this year.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Scott Greenberger, who is an editor for Stateline. Stateline's an independent, nonpartisan news service of the Pew Charitable Trust. And every year they come out with their annual review of state legislatures. It gives us a look at the budget and policy developments at all of the state capitals. What can you tell us about the differences between red and blue states in how to spend public dollars? What are the priorities?
Well, in many of the reddest states, with the state budgets starting to recover finally from the downturn, there were tax cuts for the first time in several years. States such as Indiana, close to you, cut taxes. But in bluer states, they used the surge in tax revenues for different purposes. For example, in Illinois, also nearby, they used their extra money to pay down some of their debts. And I know in Michigan, revenues were also up considerably. And there was a lot of talk in the legislature this year to use some of that money to fix roads. And I believe you considered a big tax increase to pay for that effort. But that's
still being bandied about.
Right now.
Yes.
Yeah, still being bandied about. But and then of course there are other states that have benefited greatly from the new oil boom. States such as North Dakota and Alaska were able to cut taxes because they got a huge influx of new revenue from the oil and gas industry. So it really, as you might expect, in the redder states, there was at least an attempt in many of them if the revenues were healthier to cut taxes. Whereas in blue states, another one that comes to mind is Minnesota. There was an effort to take some of that money and try to create jobs by investing in infrastructure or other sorts of public projects.
I get the sense that as you did this review of the issues and the decisions that have been tackled in all the state capitals, the Affordable Care Act, it sounds like that is going to be one of the major stories looking forward as we track what legislatures are doing. Break that down for us.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's a huge change that's coming very quickly. And states, the decision or the debate over whether to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act has grabbed a lot of headlines. But and certainly that's a very important issue affecting millions of people. But in addition to that, the states have had to decide how they're going to set up and run their health care exchanges, which is another part of the Affordable Care Act. They had the option to run it themselves or let the federal government run it or run it in partnership with the federal government. And then in addition to that, there's kind of the nitty-gritty, the technical aspects of that, choosing the plans that are going to be offered and what the sort of rules are going to be and how are states going to cut down on fraud when there are going to be a lot more people coming into the Medicaid system. So there are a lot of different aspects to the Affordable Care Act, kind of rubber hits the road sort of aspects to it that states have been grappling with this past legislative session.
And we can, I'm sure, expect this to be going on literally for years, right?
Oh, that's right. With a law this big, absolutely. And there will be, I'm sure, in a law that's this far-reaching as it rolls out and people see the way it actually works or doesn't work, there will be calls to tinker with various things or change various things. I mean, that's what happened when these programs, Medicare and Medicaid, were first implemented back in the 60s or first approved back in the 60s. There have been many, many changes since then. So I think we can expect states, lawmakers, and governors to be dealing with these sorts of issues for years to come.
What overall, taking maybe the 35,000 foot in the air view of America, Scott Greenberger, what would you think that this whole story of 37 states with one party, in control, what does that say about politics in America today?
Well, I mean, I clearly, and I wouldn't be the first to say this, I mean, we are, in many cases, we are split as a country. I mean, our politics is very polarized. On the other hand, I mean, I think you can also take a positive view of this. If you live in a state where one party, where the people of the state have elected one party to run, to be a representative of that party to be governor and also to run the legislature, the legislative chambers, then they should be getting things done. And if the voters don't like what they're doing, they can boot them out and elect members of the other party. But I think it makes sense that when people are elected and they're elected or campaign to do certain things, that when they get to the state capitol, whether it's Lansing or any other state capitol, they actually do what they say. If the voters don't like it, they should choose someone else.
Scott Greenberger, thank you for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Greenberger is an editor for Stateline, an independent news service of the Pew Charitable Trusts.